This meeting of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors will now come to order. Please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will begin our meeting today with something new. We're going to have to adopt a pet. Our animal services will be showing us a dog and a cat that is available for adoption. And I have a description of the animals. Let me start with the cat. Bobby is an orange and white neutered male tabby cat. He is approximately 3-4 years old and very affectionate. Bobby is very friendly with other cats, and he loves the company of humans. He is always very vocal and likes to greet people as they meet him. Like a lot of larger cats, he's been at the shelter for a while, and he's looking for just the right person to take him home. Maybe you can see Bobby right here. He looks like a nice cat, probably a good mouser or two. No, didn't say that in there. I live out on a farm where a mouser is a kind of an important asset to have. Okay, then we have a Blakely, a 9-month-old neutered male chihuahua. He is brown and white and is a very calm puppy. Blakely likes to be held and is very inquisitive. He was brought to the shelter as a stray earlier in the month. Puppies are not hard to find at the shelter, and Blakely is a good example of the quality dogs and puppies the shelter has. Both these animals are available today for adoption, along with many other wonderful pets that are at the Stanislaus County Animal Shelter. So when you're looking for a pet, try looking at our shelter. Just give them a call, and these pets are available as well as many other ones that are there at the shelter. There are Pink Road facility is open 7 days a week. So that's cute. Okay, that looks good. I hope they find a good home. Maybe you heard it. I thought he was a good mouser. Okay, it was a nice presentation. Okay, we will move on to Fall Prevention Awareness Week. Morning, Margie.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman DeMartini, members of the board. Margie Palomino, director for the Department of Aging and Veteran Services. We are here this morning on behalf of the Senior Fall Prevention Coalition, and we are asking this board to proclaim this week from September 20th through September 26th as Fall Prevention Awareness Week in Stanislaus County. Before we accept the resolution, we have a short presentation by two of our coalition members, Diana Olson, who is the Executive Director for the Healthy Aging Association, and Stephen Wright, Deputy Coroner for the Sheriff's Department Coroner's Office.
Thank you very much for your support. And if you look at in the lobby, there's a table out there with a lot of information on falls and how we can prevent falls. In collaboration with Stanislaus County Area Agency on Aging, and the Healthy Aging Association, we applied for a grant and received a Fall Prevention Coalition grant in September 2007, and we've been working and building the coalition ever since. And Stanislaus County was one of 10 counties that have received this grant from Archstone, and we work with the Center for Fall the Center of Excellence for Fall Prevention. And we all can relate to falls. We have grandparents, parents, aunts and uncles, and even ourselves that could be at risk for falls. Falls are the number one cause of fatalities among ages 75 and over. One in three adults over age 65 falls each year. More than 15,000 older adults die each year as a result of injury from a fall. And falls can be preventable. We were very excited in the beginning when we brought county, city, private, nonprofit all together, that the Stanislaus Coroner's Office showed up, because they have the ability to track statistics. And Stanislaus County, there's only one other county that the coroner's office is involved with fall prevention, and that's San Diego County. So we were really excited. Steve has been there from the beginning, and he's put Steve, deputy coroner's office, or assistant deputy coroner, has put a presentation together, and actually you debut it, because it's going to be shown at our Fall Prevention Summit on October 9th. It will be running all day so seniors can see the information. And I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
Morning. Thank you again for the time to allow us to present this to you. As you can see, the initial screen is showing is hopefully gathering attention of seniors to allow them that falls are serious and that they can die from a fall, hence why the coroner's office is involved. As we go through, we're trying to appeal to seniors, letting them know that they, throughout their life, they've worked hard their whole life. They have, as the screen shows, they pay their dues. They, at a time of retirement, they get to enjoy family and friends more often. Hence the golden years, a time to enjoy life. But soon, as most elderly or advanced in age realize that reality steps in, and they realize very soon that their body is not as strong as it used to be as they were in their younger years. Many of them, as they grow older, will start to use or tend to use assistive devices, canes, walkers, anything to help them mobilize throughout their community, home, wherever they happen to go. So a slip, trip, and then a fall. Why the cartoon picture, as it says, that falls occur unexpectedly. No one there is there to take a picture of them falling. It goes to show that the falls are unexpected. They happen when they're not expecting it, such as walking down the hallway, getting out of bed in the morning, as we'll show here in a few minutes. Once they do fall, there's one of two locations that they will end up going. Usually it's going to be to the local hospital where most cases come. But as you can see, a good percentage of these cases will end up at the coroner's office. And as it is titled, it is the terminal fall. It's something that they can fix at that point in time. So, but if they do happen to go into the hospital, are they enjoying life as they once were previously? Well, once in the hospital, they get to stay in a hospital bed, which is not theirs, to recuperate from the injuries that they sustained. They get to have IVs, monitors, and other tubes attached to them. They get to go through rehabilitation. They get to eat hospital food. Obviously, it's something that they're not accustomed to because they're not the ones who have fixed it. They get to be next door neighbors to those who are noisy and watch their TV programs or hear their programs. So, and it's not so much for their alone time anymore. They get to share time with nurses, doctors, and other people who come in and out checking on them or visiting their new roommate. So their answer, if they're enjoying life now, is obviously no. They don't get to enjoy the privileges they once had before falling. So a terminal fall, what is it, what it can lead to? If they get the first fall and nothing happens, consider themselves lucky. If they fall another time and they receive scrapes, bruises, something along those lines, not a terminal fall, but yet something hopefully that is a warning sign. Other falls can lead to fractures, broken bones, which obviously can lead to a terminal fall. A lot of them will break their hip, pelvis, femur, what have you, and it takes a toll on their body just recuperating from those injuries. Other falls lead to internal bleeding, again can lead to a terminal fall, and like I mentioned earlier, some of these falls can result in an automatic death where the coroner's office becomes involved. So terminal falls in Stanislaus County, we were able to track that 57 deaths were related directly or indirectly to a fall from adults 65 years of age or older, and those are based on 2008 stats. 2009, we're already seeing, I think we're already up to about 30 plus, if I remember offhand. Reasons for terminal falls, a lot of them we receive are when decedents are getting out of bed. They're not using their assistive devices properly or at all. They also have had a number of cases where they trip over their assistive device, or they trip over their walker, or trip over their cane. They fall out of their wheelchair, or trip out from their wheelchair. Other common causes are when they're walking, they trip over carpet, things that are not conducive to a good environment for them to walk around, sidewalks, steps, throw rugs, anything in nature that can help stumble their feet. We had a number of people send in testimonials to hopefully capture seniors at this fall prevention week or summit to let them know that this is not made up statistics. These are not made up causes, that real people suffer these problems. This first testimonial, Arlene Wertner wrote in about her mother falling in September of 2000. She's shopping, goes to change into some clothes, and had a fall. She ended up breaking her hip. She declined to go to a facility, and her daughter was able to provide the care that she needed during that rehabilitation period. But since that time, it made her very aware of just how serious a fall can be and how prone that she could be given her age, that she's not as young as she used to be. In the second testimonial, Doug Chadwick wrote in thinking that he saw a tree limb that had grown over his roof and was getting close to cutting off reception from the TV satellite dish. So he decides that it would be a good idea that he could just take care of the problem himself. He's done it before, done other things of similar physical activity. And so as he's up on top of the roof, he cuts the limb off and attempts to go back down the ladder, but realizes that his strength and balance aren't as what they used to be. And he ends up being stuck on the roof for quite some time. And so he gets thinking that maybe I should call 911 out, but it'd be pretty embarrassing to have fire come rescue a 73-year-old gentleman off the roof. So he tries one more time, gets all the strength together for one more chance at it, and successfully gets down the ladder. There was no injury, no fall, but it made him very aware of what his new limitations were being at 73 years of age. Third testimony is Kathleen Vaughn. Her daughter Janice wrote in, she had various falls, as you can read through this testimonial. She starts out with her grandson. She's dancing around the living room, and she ends up falling and trying to protect him. She stepped off a concrete patio and fell and broke her foot. She was incapacitated in a wheelchair for some quite time. And made her realize, again, as you read down probably about the third part of the second paragraph, she was unable to drive for more than 2 months after the fall. A lot of times seniors realize just how dependent they become on family, friends, whoever is able to help them through this time. And hopefully through these testimonies we'll get to seniors again that to take falls a little bit more seriously, make their homes a little bit more safer. The fourth testimony, again, was alluding to earlier. Mary Lou Hacker, she's 66 years of age. She is with her grandson dancing around the family room. She trips and she falls backward protecting her son, ends up breaking her arm. She gets rehabilitated and gets back on her feet and becomes independent like she used to. But as you read through this paragraph, she falls again and trips and breaks her ankle, I believe. And she starts to realize through these times that she becomes dependent on family to help her through this, she starts to become depressed because now she's incapacitated to living her independent life as she once knew it. She gets fixed once again and rehabilitates and is able to get back out again, and about a third of the way down, she goes, "In November, I was feeling normal again and went on a 10-day cruise with my family when I tripped again and broke my right hand." And she was on her return back home, but nonetheless took some time because now her hand's incapacitated and she's back again where she is constrained from living her life as she once knew it. And she ends up falling about four times, and about, you see in the last few sentences there, as hopefully other seniors will read during the summit, She goes, I am also doing some of my exercise routine and trying to regain my confidence in walking 4 miles into the neighborhood. The fear of falling in is always with me, making me hypervigilant of my surroundings. Also, I have the loss of confidence in walking the neighborhood alone for my fear of walking. So again, these testimonials are hopefully to grab the attention of seniors during this coalition, that these are real people. That's why we added pictures to help identify that these are not just words, not just a story, but real people in everyday life that they may or may not come in contact with that have had a fall. And most likely, if they will admit to it, they probably have had a fall themselves at some time or another, haven't admitted to it. So the message to seniors is that we want them to stop falling. And we try to make it a little bit humorous, but again, same time serious, that they'll grab their attention and make them realize that this can't happen to them. They're not invulnerable. So what can seniors do? And in this message, they can increase lighting in the home, hopefully during pathways, whether it's to the bathrooms or to the stairs, which we do see a number of times where people fall. You can use nightlights to help light up the area, especially in bedrooms, hallways, bathrooms. They can remove throw rugs or loose carpet or secure them firmly to the floor, which is a reason why they trip and fall. Other reasons? To be cautious when walking on thick carpet. To install handles or railings in bathtubs and showers to prevent slipping. To use non-slip or rubber mats, or to install non-slip strips on the tub and shower floors. Again, trying to get them to realize every opportunity that could occur a fall in their home, whether it's in the bathroom, the hallway, the kitchen floor, the garage, into their home or out of the home. Also, to take their time when getting into or out of bathtubs and showers. I think that's probably one of the biggest problems there, is that they want to rush getting around or being mobile in their home or in their environment. Is they need to take their time. Again, referencing the previous slide of being that this is reality, that they're not as young as they used to be, so they need to take that in consideration when moving around their home or whatever environment they have to be in. 8, arrange furniture so there's plenty of room to walk freely. And 9, remove electrical cords from walkways by placing them under rugs or furniture or stapling them along the walls or baseboards. Number 10 is to keep phones in every room of the house and by the bed, and keep emergency numbers by each phone so that if they do happen to have them fall, whatever measures they've taken to make their home safe, that again, whatever measures they have done doesn't necessarily guarantee that they will not have a fall. So act responsibly. Be prepared in whichever room they may happen to be in, whether it's in a bedroom, living room, family room, kitchen, to have a room at least nearby that they can get to. One of the things we'll be passing out during the summit meeting is this fall prevention guide. And it's a resource guide to has phone numbers, places, people of contacts that these seniors can get in contact with if they have a problem in their home, if they need ideas, they need help to make their home a more safer environment, that they can have a contact or a way for maybe their family members, sons, daughters, that they can call these people to assist in making their home safe, whatever they need done. So we'll thank them for coming to enjoy the summit and tell them to enjoy the rest of the booths that will be there. And again, not to forget to pick up the prevention guide, because it would be a very valuable source for them to read, go through at a later time. And the ending slide here is all the different members of the coalition that are assisting and helping us put the summit on. And that's the conclusion of my presentation.
That concludes our presentation. Diana Olson will accept the resolution. Thank you.
That was a great presentation. I think we need to call attention to fall prevention. I've had elderly relatives in the past, too, that have had the same problem. I think we all will come to that point sometime where we have to start paying attention and get around more carefully so we don't fall down. I'm only 39, so it's going to be a while before I have to worry about that. But anyway, the Board of Supervisors has as a resolution for you that we will give to you, proclaiming this week Fall Prevention Week. I won't read the whole thing, but let me read the bottom part. of the resolution. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this Board of Supervisors does hereby declare and proclaim the week of September 20th through the 26th, 2009, as Fall Prevention Awareness Week in Stanislaus County, and call upon our citizens and our interested groups to observe this week with appropriate activities to promote awareness of fall prevention. So let me present this to you. Would you like to have a few last words?
Thank you very much. And October 9th from 8 to 2 in the Center Plaza is the Healthy Aging and Fall Prevention Summit. You get a chance, stop by. Last year we had about 1,200 seniors attend, and we're hoping to have that many this year. So please stop by.
Okay, thank you. We will now move to public comment. This is the time the audience can address the board on any non-agenda item. I do not have any requests to speak, but if anybody would like to speak on a non-agenda item, please come to the podium, state your name for the record.
Good morning. Been a while.
Morning.
Nice piece in Stockton. My name is Deborah Harper. I reside at 1801 Coffee Road, Modesto, California. I didn't get it all written down, so I'm going to go on the fly again. Prayers. I moved into this cute, adorable little studio apartment on Coffee Road, and from day one, I've been experiencing somebody else's airborne drug use. I've called the drug tip hotline numerous times. I've called the sheriff's department, and I was referred to the DEA's office. I was told by the drug tip hotline to call 911 if there's drug use in progress. My goal was to attempt to catch these people to just get rid of the stuff floating in the air. It's an unpleasant experience to go through a drug reaction and withdrawal 7 days for each exposure. When I called the drug tip hotline numerous times, I had less response than when I called for a friend in another apartment complex. I called the 911 per the instructions on the tape from the drug tip hotline. The dispatcher immediately argued with me. I'm sorry, but I don't think I don't think any person anywhere in any job is paid to argue with anyone on the telephone. She told me it was not a life-threatening problem and that I didn't need to be bothering her, pretty much in so many words. And I explained to her that I was doing as instructed for the 911 call, I mean for the drug tip hotline, to call 911 for something in progress. She bantered a few minutes more. I hung up peacefully. I called a second time just to see if this was going to be the standard procedure. It was. The second dispatcher referred me to the non-emergency number. I said, thank you. So I called the sheriff's department because I remember the cute little German Shepherd dog that we had in here showing everybody that they could find the cotton ball of drugs underneath the chair. They referred me to the DEA line. The DEA line spoke to a nice little pleasant gal named Bev, who became argumentative. She didn't want to take the information when I gave it to her per the previous conversations. She demanded that I let her ask the questions and then answer her questions. Then she told me that she was not a first responder number, which I understood immediately. She acted as if I was upset, qualifying what I was saying and telling me how I was feeling. Unfortunately, that wasn't how I was feeling. I was trying to persistently and pleasantly and peacefully obtain the correct information, the correct procedure on how to go from experiencing the drug reaction to getting the cute little German Shepherd out. Nobody wants to tell me that. So my question now specifically and directly is, we had that German Shepherd out here. What is the process from somebody getting a reaction from something currently happening to having the little German Shepherd come out and locate that drug problem? Does anybody here know?
I do know that the dog that was here for the demonstration belonged to the probation department and not to the sheriff's department.
Okay.
Are you in the city or in the county?
City, Coffee Road.
Okay, that would be the city. probably the appropriated agency would be the Modesto Police Department.
They keep referring me to... They referred me to DEA. Isn't that a county? State?
Not really.
State? I got to keep
going.
I
believe that's a state-funded program.
Thank you for your time on that. I've also have an experience with the current Stanislaus County Health Services. I've been told 3 times that a procedure was going to be ordered, and this is... I just went to my 3rd appointment yesterday. I'm on MIA. I'm not a complainer. The doctor is an awesome doctor. She's very smart. She's very bright. But unfortunately, after 3 appointments and 3 promises, the procedure was never ordered. And it has the health symptoms have progressed to the fact that I feel like that body parts are falling out of areas where they shouldn't be in the colon area. Now, I'm just in prayer because due to the slander, the misrepresentation I'm experiencing, nobody wants to take me serious. I can't find one person, healthcare, public system, to take me serious. I'm just in prayer because we have to, you know, we had this awesome presentation, I'm sorry I was late for it. But if we just treat each other with respect, we're going to have less human error. You know, if you just try to be nice to somebody and try to do things the way they're meant to be done, we will have less human error, we will have less VYA, and the whole system will move a lot smoother, if possible. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else from the audience that wishes to address this board on a non-agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. Does any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second. A motion's been made by Supervisor Chiesa and seconded by Supervisor Grover to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0. We will now move to our 9:15 scheduled hearing. It's a public hearing to consider the adoption of 2008-2009 Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Kirk Ford. I'm your Planning and Community Development Director. And we're here this morning to discuss our Community Development Block Grant Program that's funded by the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department. Every year, we prepare with our consortium city partners a consolidated action plan, and every year we have to come back and report what we've done in the past year. With me this morning is Juan Gonzalez. He's an assistant planner with our block grant program, and he's here to provide you with a discussion of the highlights of our fiscal year 2008-2009, almost $2.5 million program. So, Juan.
Good morning, Chairman DiMartini, members of the board, Mr. Thoring, Mr. Robinson. We're presenting the Consolidated Annual Action or Annual Performance Evaluation Report for fiscal year 2008-2009. Like Kirk mentioned, Stanislaus County CDBG Consortium is composed of the cities of Ceres, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford. The consortium annually receives CDBG funding from the U.S. Housing and Urban Development, and then those funds are distributed amongst the consortium members based on a poverty and population formula. CDBG funds must be utilized to meet one of 3 national objectives. These are to directly benefit low and moderate income people, prevent or eliminate blind conditions, or meet an urgent need in the community, such as the 1997 flood, in which CDBG funds were utilized to address that community need. The purpose of the CAPER is to provide a 15-day public review period, provide the CDBG and ESG allocations, and report on the accomplishments of the past fiscal year. During fiscal year 2008-2009, the consortium received an annual allocation of about $2.4 million, and this table gives you a breakdown of how the funds were distributed amongst consortium members and special programs and projects. The consortium agrees to set aside about 10% of its allocation for the public service program. Under this program, nonprofit entities are given the opportunity to apply for grants of up to $20,000 and provide services to consortium jurisdiction residents. Under this program, about $246,000 were made available to nonprofit entities, and over 57,000 residents received some sort of service through this program. One of these programs was Habitat for Humanity under Winds of Hope. Habitat provided energy-efficient windows to low-income households in the consortium jurisdictions. A total of 900 windows and to 212 households were provided during this past fiscal year. Every 3 years, the county must conduct an analysis of impediments to fair housing. The analysis is a review of impediments or barriers that affect fair housing choice. This past year, the update was conducted by Project Sentinel, and examples of some impediments included in the analysis include the shortfall of affordable rental housing to very low-income households. Another one indicated was the high number of new immigrant households in the consortium jurisdictions. Also, to enforce fair housing laws and address some of these impediments to fair housing, the county contracts with Project Sentinel to provide fair housing services. During this past fiscal year, Project Sentinel provided fair housing service to 367 individuals. 167 of those resulted in tenant landlord resolutions. In partnership with the CEO's office and the planning department, Computer Tutor provided computer training to low-income individuals throughout consortium unincorporated areas and Newman and Oakdale. Over the year, 950 individuals received computer training. Stanislaus County's CDBG funding was allocated toward the Empire Storm Drain Project. Usually the cities and county allocate their money towards some type of infrastructure improvement project in a low-income neighborhood. During the fiscal year 2008-09, engineering, design, and environmental work was completed for Phase 1A of the Empire project, and construction is expected to begin during fiscal year 2009-10. Another source of funding that the consortium receives is emergency shelter grant funds. This past fiscal year, it received about $109,000, and these funds are designed to mainly provide services to the homeless. Over 700 homeless individuals received services through this program. The Santa Fe project is an example of a subrecipient of ESG funds. This is a winter homeless shelter for families with children that is located out in Empire. The Interfaith Ministries leases the migrant camp from the Housing Authority during the month of the winter and provides shelter to homeless families with children. During this past season, they provided shelter to 31 families. 24 of those, or 77%, found or were placed in permanent housing. With that, we recommend that the board closes the public review period for fiscal 2008-09 consolidated annual performance evaluation report and adopt the report. If there are any questions, we'd be happy to address those.
Any questions of the board for staff? Okay, seeing none at this time. Push the button a little harder, Mr. Chiesa.
On the emergency services grant, is that $900,000?
Is that on the 109,000.
Okay. And we have one shelter that we participate in? the county in Empire only?
That's the only shelter that was funded. There were there were three other programs that were also funded, but that was just one example.
Okay, what were the other programs that were funded? Can you?
The other one was Community Housing and Shelter Services, their homeless prevention program, which they provide rental subsidies to prevent people or families from becoming homeless. The other one was another one of Interfaith Ministries programs, which is the Redwood Family Center, which provides shelter also to single mothers with children and provides case management to them. And the other one was Children's Crisis Center, which provides shelter to homeless children.
Okay. And the other cities, some of the cities don't participate in the block funding, Houston, I think, but that's a Turlock. There was one of the in Riverbank. Did they just opt out? They opt not to participate, or because everyone has programs, I'm sure they need more funding.
The city of Riverbank and Houston usually apply to the state for funding, and they opt not to participate because they're usually successful in obtaining funds from the state. City of Modesto is their own entitlement. They get entitlement funds, and the city of Turlock as well.
So Riverbank and Houston think they can do better alone, or
they choose to do that, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The way I understand it is that they can do it on their own, but there's no guarantee that they'll receive funding if their grants are not accepted. When you're in a consortium, you are guaranteed a certain amount of money. So, and that's the reason for doing it. But if you have a project and you want to apply for it separately, you know, like some of these cities do, usually they're successful, but they do run the risk of not getting any funding at all. Any other questions of staff? Okay, this is a public hearing. We'll open the public hearing. Anybody who'd like to address the board in this matter, please come forward to the podium, state your name for the record. Okay, seeing no one, I will close public hearing, bring it back to the board for action. Comments from the board?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Supervisor O'Brien and seconded by Supervisor Monteith to approve. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0. Thank you. We will now move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the State Fish and Game Commission regarding proposed regulatory action relating to hybrid animals and plants.
Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
This board has received a letter from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development regarding the approval of the consolidated plan and grant assistance for Stanislaus County in the amount of $2,601,386.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? Supervisor Keyes.
I just want to comment. Yesterday I had an opportunity to go to Sheriff Christensen. We went out into the Union Junction area or the safety zone and went through the process of and how it came about. And I know we're all familiar with that because Birgit had talked about it. But it was a very eye-opening experience, and I would hope that you guys would have the opportunity to do that. It's you see what you're dealing with, and you know most of the people when you're out there, you see they take care of their yards and they just want to be left alone. And gangs are a true scourge of society, and I think this is something that hopefully is going to work. Keep our fingers crossed, because eliminating gangs is probably a near impossibility, but keeping them under wraps is possible. So if you have a chance, I would suggest you do it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chiesa. Any further reports from the board? I don't have a report, but I would like to make a comment about the letter of the editor by Jose Garza yesterday. And I would like, I do appreciate Mr. Garza looking at the board agenda, but had he read our agenda item a little more carefully, he would have seen that the Heron Point boat launching facility in Woodward Reservoir was a state grant from the Boating and Waterways Grants. That money could not be used for anything else except that boat launching ramp. It could not be used to put sidewalks in South Modesto or anywhere else. It was restricted money. I also would like to say that this board, as well as previous ones, has spent millions of dollars in infrastructure for South Modesto and other areas. Other areas like the Salida Empire. We're doing a $12 million project now in Keys. You have to remember that the houses that he is talking about in South Modesto were built as low-income housing back in just after the Second World War. And these houses were built without the infrastructure standards that we have today of storm drains and sidewalks. And we will continue to try and upgrade these communities. And we have made a commitment to do that, and we have spent millions of dollars. Just in the Shackelford area alone, I believe there's $9 million that was spent upgrading that community. But accepting a grant from the state of California that's restricted to boat launching and waterways is not taking anything away from what would be done in South Modesto or anywhere else. And I just wanted to make that point. Anyone else? Okay, we will adjourn to a closed session. Mr. Doring.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have two items to discuss in closed session. Conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation involving two cases. First is the Building Industry Association of Central California versus the County of Stanislaus et al. This is Stanislaus County Superior Court case number 622705. And also we'll discuss the case Arinavaz et al. Versus County of Stanislaus et al. Stanislaus County Superior Court case number 628471. This is pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A, and we do expect a report out on the BIA matter.
This meeting stands adjourned.